into building the party because they're fighting for social change. And for decades, they've wanted to believe that this party represents them. And they've walked out because they don't see this party as representing them.
We're going to have to leave it there. But of course, this conversation will continue. And I hope you'll both come back with us to continue talking about this as we carry on covering this election through November. And of course, the issues well beyond. That does it for the show. Rebecca Traister and Khushana Sawant, thank you so much for joining us. I want to say special thanks to our crew here at PhillyCam.
I'm Ruby Beckett.
Anise Taylor.
Jennifer Burton.
Jihad Ali.
Connie Kham.
Pete Salona.
Donald Butler.
Jose Hernandez.
Laura Deutsch.
Andrea Spruill.
Dan Hoyto.
Ryan Saunders.
Keisha Woods.
Gretchen Clausing. And this is PhillyCam.
That's the crew from PhillyCam. I'll be doing a report back from the conventions and two talks tonight in Provincetown, Massachusetts, Provincetown Town Hall, and tomorrow night at Martha's Vineyard at Old Wailing Church. Check democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Dina Dinikas, Dersen Malkoff, Tarina Nadura, Robbie Karen, Honey, Miss Sue, Elizabeth.
Live mic. This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is July 29th. Oh my goodness, the music continues on. It's such an exciting day. Even the computer can't stop playing. But our show is all about issues that concern Dearborn and the surrounding area, local news and alternative views. And today we're continuing, and it's the last chance we have before the primary election next Tuesday, August 2nd, to question candidates who are going to be on the ballot. And today we have first, in the first half hour, Abdallah Hamoud, who is running for Michigan 15th District Representative. My colleague, my name is Jay Koronek, by the way, station advisor here at WHFR. My colleague, John Conroy, is in the studio. Hi, John.
How you doing, Jay?
Okay. I'm just making sure mics are on, of course. Yep. And, of course, our special guest today, Abdallah Hamoud. So welcome to the WHFR studios, Abdallah. And we're going to begin right away with the first topic.
Okay. Thank you, Jay. Welcome to Abdallah and his campaign manager, Gita.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. Very good to have you. Well, let's start off right off the bat with your background, your education, mm-hmm. The type of work you're doing, mm-hmm. because you told us you do work full-time, and having to do this and work is quite an undertaking. So why don't you tell us what was your motivation for getting into to running for office like this?
Of course. So first and foremost, thank you for having me on the show. Happy to be here to talk about all this. I'm born and raised in the city of Dearborn, and a product of the city of Dearborn through and through, a product of our public school system, McDonald Elementary, Woodworth Middle School, Fortson High School. After which I went and got my, I actually attended Henry Ford Community College when it was a community college, mm-hmm. dual enrollment while I was at Fortson High School.
Great.
After high school, I got my bachelor's from the University of Michigan Dearborn, and my bachelor's of biology. And then afterwards, received my master of public health from the University of Michigan Ann Arbor. So that's my educational experience. Then from there, I went and worked for the University of Michigan Health System, where I was a healthcare policy analyst, and largely focused on talking about healthcare policy issues, published a few healthcare policy publications, and it was focused around improving healthcare quality and decreasing costs. After several years, I took a sabbatical, and I found myself with the United Nations Relief Work Agency over in Jordan, working refugee camps and trying to do the same thing for them, trying to help improve healthcare quality in a much different environmental setting, obviously, while decreasing their costs. And when I came back, I thought to find a new adventure, and I found myself where I currently am now at my full-time job at Henry Ford Health System, where I'm a senior healthcare advisor. And now my role is to really just provide increased access to our patients and to our members, try to decrease healthcare costs and make sure they have all that they need to receive the best healthcare possible.
I know you just explained that in general, but what does a healthcare advisor, who do they relate to? The patients directly? Or are you sort of a special consultant doing research and development really for the Henry Ford system?
Yeah, so within Henry Ford Health System, I report to the administrators at Henry Ford Health System and to HAP, Health Alliance Plan, the insurance arm. Mm. And essentially what I do is I identify, based on the trends that I see at the statewide level or nationally, effective means to improve healthcare quality, and I make those suggestions then to our administrators and to my leadership. That way, they know what's happening. It's all evidence-based, researched, and we try to implement that at our own system and our insurance company for our members and for our patients.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a little bit of a liaison type of relationship.
Yeah, yeah, because Henry Ford Health System owns HAP, and so it's a great position to work on both.
And the final mention, really, John put two questions there. Why did you choose to run for political office? This is the first time that you're running.
It is.
Politics is a rough business these days sometimes. It usually costs a lot of money. You have to have a good organization to succeed. And there's all the political interests, like lobbyists and so on, that'll come after you once you get elected. So it's kind of tough. Of course, you're a young person. You're part of the health system, and you're very healthy, so you're ready to challenge that. But what made the difference? What turned you to this career?
Yeah, I really believe policy is a lever for change, and ultimately my decision stemmed around being from Dearborn. You know, born and raised in this community, as a first-generation Arab American, my parents immigrated here in the 70s, and Dearborn gave my family everything, financial and social opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so for me, using this platform as state representative, should I be elected, would just be a way of continuing to give back, to use this platform to make sure that we build a better tomorrow for my younger brothers and younger sister, for the next generation, so that they have even greater opportunity to flourish in our society. That's essentially what it came down to, is just to give back.
One of the classic textbooks on politics and political science 101 from quite a few years ago when I took it was by Harold Laswell. And the title of the book was Politics, the Science of Who Gets What, Why, Where, When, and How. So it's all about power in a way. And as you said, policy. But that has to do with passing laws and setting regulations that hopefully benefit everybody.
Yes.
And so the only way to do it, the only way to get those things done is through the political system, even if it's challenging or complicated. That's all we got. There's no other way to set up new systems and change our institution if we think it needs some changing, if not some tweaking. So why did you choose to be a Democrat?
I have always been a Democrat. My families are affiliate with the Democratic Party, and it's largely because we believe in the progressive social values, the ideas of the ideals of equality, of equity, of parity, and I believe the Democratic Party best represents the hardworking middle class, which is what I'm a product of. My mother is now a small business owner. My father was a truck driver, delivering steel for the autos for several years. And that's what I came from. That's the household I came out of. And for me, that was best represented by the Democratic Party. They best represented our ideals, our values. And that party was who fought for the middle class, which is the backbone of our economy, especially here in Dearborn.
So that's the general philosophical approach to why you chose to be Democrat. Do you have certain political heroes that, well, they don't even have to be part of the Democratic Party, but who do you see as your political heroes? This is a question I didn't get too many direct responses from all the other candidates we interviewed, and I understand it's it takes a little thinking, so I'm just throwing that at you. Any people in general that you remember or that you've heard about that are really heroic in politics?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you say political hero, who comes top of mind is Muhammad Ali. I think he had a finesse in the way he approached political issues. He was a humanitarian. He was a politician in that he stood up for civil rights and liberties. I think of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. I think of Abraham Lincoln, who is one of my favorite presidents. And what he had to overcome and what he tackled, what he faced, and what he did for our nation. There are several individuals. If we fast forward to today, I am a big Bernie Sanders fan because of the fact that he's focused on the issues. And he's never stemmed away from that. Mm-hmm. And you can go back for as far as you can, you know, via social media, on YouTube, all the clips that we've seen. Bernie Sanders is an honest man. He's authentic and he's genuine. And I think those characteristics are hard to find today in quote-unquote politicians. Mm-hmm. And I look up to that. I think those are the type of individuals we need within our system to really not just voice for change, but actually provide change, mm-hmm. to deliver change.
I think one of the reasons that Bernie could be so independent was that he actually was not mm-hmm. part of the Democratic electing system in Vermont. He ran as an independent. And so it's just whatever he thought, whatever he wanted to say, whatever he thought was the best, and just turned out to be, you know, a very progressive Democratic mm-hmm. Kind of position, which is in the minority and still is, I think, but certainly made a big difference. I was at a couple rallies in Dearborn that I went to with candidates, and some of the biggest turnouts were for Ron Paul a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Ron
mm-hmm.
Paul, I mean, he was running then for Republican presidential nomination, but the system, if you will, made sure he didn't really get even much time in the debates, but had great support here in Dearborn, perhaps on his views of war in the Middle East.
Yes.
And Bernie Sanders' strong views. This won't directly affect the 15th Michigan District Representative, but certainly Bernie Sanders spoke out strongly and kept the fight going as long as he could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you'll find, you know, you made the point about Ron Paul doing well because of his positions in the Middle East. You find that the Arab American community is not really tied down to party lines. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2000, we saw the majority of them vote for George Bush, and then they voted for Obama, and the majority of them voted for Bernie Sanders. And I think it really comes down to the foreign policy that they push forth because
sure.
it impacts family members back home in the Middle East.
Of course. Okay. John?
Yes, Abdullah. The other question I had, or one question I had also, was local politicians or local representatives that mm-hmm. are in office now in the Dearborn area or in Michigan, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anybody that you'd like to, you know, perhaps pattern yourself after?
Of course. You know, George Hart. I think he was a great individual because you can have one conversation with him and he remembered your name. And he remembered that conversation. That is something I try to take away because it really just, you know, when you have that conversation with an individual on a personal level, you are making a difference. You're allowing them a vehicle to voice their concerns. And then you can take those concerns and make a difference. And I think George Hart had a way of just touching you in the sense of within that conversation. He made it personal. He made
personal
you feel
touch.
Comfortable.
Right.
It was always at every event. I mean, I go back quite a ways here with the station, and every Dearborn homecoming, and he would shake everyone's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, yes, he had this amazing memory to remember everyone's name. So he certainly tried to get out and meet people and listen to them. In fact, at one point, he even recorded on a cassette, and he sent them around to all the radio stations in Michigan what he thought should be Michigan's theme song, you know, the state song, and he didn't have too bad a voice, you know, but I don't know if we ever played it on the air, but it wasn't part of our format. It was one big band type song, you know, but it was okay,
mm-hmm.
He was quite a character, and he was a longtime elected representative and senator, too, for a while. Was he on the city council? He just seemed to be everywhere for many, many years. So I understand that. Shall we get into the specific issues, John?
I had another. Obviously, you're a good historian. You've gone back in history and to mention Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone that not everyone is that familiar with,
and
I appreciate that. You also mentioned you in your beginning that you had experienced time in the refugee camps.
Yeah.
How did that impact you as far as the physical and toll that it took on patients?
You know that the several months I was in the working with refugees in the refugee camps, those changed my life because I saw the impact of policy in those centers. I saw the impact of war, and you know, the project I was really working on was how to reduce obesity amongst diabetic refugees.
Wow.
And we were successful in doing
very
so. Important. But, you know, just to give you some of the, you know, day-to-day situations we dealt with, one day I was sitting down at the health command center, and a representative from the security department came down, and they said, we need to find a new alternative route to our supply center because a terrorist faction just showed up in our supply center.
Wow.
So that was something they'd overcome. Another volunteer was actually working on developing a PowerPoint presentation. to help refugee children identify landmines in the ground. And so we were faced with different problems that we needed to overcome, and it opened up my eyes to the world. It kind of grounded me, and it made me more humble and grateful for all that I had.
Where was this located?
I was in Jordan. I was in Amman, Jordan. Okay. And I got to travel all of Jordan to go through all the refugee camps.
Yeah. I know one of the most educational experience I had in college was a semester I spent in France. And you might say, well, France, that's just Western, you know, cultural values, although they didn't like the U.S. too much. They still don't, really. But this was during the Vietnam War time in the 1960s. And I realized that there was an international view on these issues, like war in Vietnam and our fighting in it, that was completely different than what we were being told in this country. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was different perspective, but also different facts that we're not getting through. So it sort of opened me up to, from then on, want to learn more about the full perspective of things, if as best possible, even coming back to the United States. So whenever you can become part of a foreign culture, it helps to know the language. You knew?
Mm-hmm. I could speak Arabic,
so that helps. Right. Then you can get a real, more deeply immersed, and you can find out more direct things on how people feel and how they view the world and how to relate, you know, and that's the whole thing.
I think the most touching thing was I got to meet with some of the refugees that made it out of Syria, the Palestinian refugees in Syria. And when you hear their stories, the day-to-day struggles, what they had to eat, the shelter that they had, the resources that they had, you know, I won't go into too much detail, but it really opens up your eyes to what the conditions were like and the conditions that they had to live through. And you have to think to yourself, these are the refugees that made it out. And think of all the untold stories that we'll never know about.
And I assume you'd have to agree, and this is a national issue, mm-hmm. but in terms of the refugees you met, they certainly weren't primarily criminals of any sort, or quote-unquote terrorists, whatever that means. I mean...
Not by any means. These are just hard-working families who are just...
And it had to be the people also that had the means to get out somehow, that they had the friends or the money to get that access out. Poorer people maybe had no option.
Well, even the perseverance to make it out.
Right.
And a lot of them had to leave, you know, family members back home, and had to push through with the children and the elderly to really make it out. But I think it came down to perseverance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope the full story gets out, and that story gets treated accurately and fairly in the press.
Yeah, on a little different note, you said you were a product of a local Dearborn education, elementary, middle, or junior high, and then high school, and then Michigan and Michigan-Dearborn. What changes would you like to see made in the educational system here?
I would like to see more focus on learning in the classrooms and not just testing. I'd like to see the expansion of early start programs. So that's universal, because it's been proven that access to early education is just beneficial to all students. I'd love to see that expanded. I would love to see that we have the resources we need to ensure that we're delivering the highest education possible, that our teachers are protected, and that the students are offered that best valued education. There are. I mean, I'm a champion for public school system because I'm a product of the public school system.
That's what you said.
I think there's a grit. There's an exposure that you get in the public school system that you don't get anywhere else. So I would love to see that. I think you know, problem we are also having is a shortage of teachers, and it's because of the bureaucratic red tape that's being put in place. The funding is being cut. If the teachers are coming out and voicing their concerns for what's happening, they're being targeted. Yeah. They're the ones receiving the consequences. And I think we need to defend our teachers and our unions and so on.
We should.
I usually always mention at least once a show, my daughter has been 12 years a teacher, 13 now, in Southfield Public Schools. And she is in middle school, teaches science. But she's got about 35 people. 38 students in her class, and I was a teacher for many, many years. Never had that many. I can't imagine trying to have a discussion or a demonstration with that many people involved at the same time. Class size does make a difference. I'm sure there's some statistics on that. Mm-hmm. And also the issue of special education. Southfield, however they work it out, they decided to dump the special, I mean, seriously, they picked science because they thought the special ed students, most of whom, when I say special ed, they've got severe problems mentally and physically and behavioral problems, mm-hmm. too, and they need very special help and assistance. Well, they don't have that in this middle school, and they decided we'll just dump. So over almost half of her 35, 38 students are severely handicapped, disabled. Mm-hmm. And she put up a sign over the classroom door, "Welcome to Thunderdome," mm-hmm. which is a reference to the third Mad Max movie, mm-hmm. where you get into this cage and the only person that gets out is the one that's still alive. because I've talked to, of course, our current superintendent, and he guarantees me there's no Thunderdomes in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. That the class sizes are somewhat smaller, although still around 30, I think, yeah. in many cases. And they actually have some special ed teachers, maybe part-time, mm-hmm. that go around, mm-hmm. at least, and so it's a little better than, but in Southfield, they claim they don't have the money somehow. I don't know. So something has to be done with the funding, absolutely.
Yeah, I
mean, whether rebalance it or increase mm-hmm. it or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think another thing that I was very fond of, when I was in high school, I had the opportunity for dual enrollment, where I attended high school, but also took college courses here at Henry Ford Community College. And I think expanding those programs, dual enrollment and early college.
The Henry Ford programs are so excellent for mm-hmm. those students that want to improve themselves with that. That's fantastic that you did that.
Yeah, and it put me 1 year ahead. I finished undergrad a year early because I was able to complete over 30 college credits while in high school.
Wow.
So such programs are just beneficial.
It's a bigger challenge. Not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. They have to meet certain criteria of skill level, reading and writing, and other, doing well in other courses. But it's definitely an advantage, as I think I said to Roxanne McDonald, who mm-hmm. I interviewed Tuesday on a special journal show, since we weren't on last Friday due to a power outage here at the college, that a previous superintendent said we do have advanced placement programs in Dearborn. It's called Henry Ford College. People just go over there and take those classes, but now they have systems in place where mm-hmm. it's easier to do that. There is the transportation issue, getting back and forth and the time during the day, but I think it's a great way also to expand your education and to really get into things that might be totally exciting. Well, we've got to move on. By the way, just time out for brief mention, folks. You've been listening for the last 20 minutes to the new WHFR Journal for July 29th, 2016. Remember, primary election next Tuesday, and that is the August 2nd, and that's from, I think it's 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at night. So please, if you're registered, please consider all the candidates and please vote. We're with Abdullah Hamoud for this first half hour. Abdullah, go on and talk now about we have a number of issues on the sheet in front of you there. What catches your eye? Obviously, health insurance in Michigan, that's one of your areas of background and mm-hmm. experience right now, too. Should that be changed at all in Michigan? We did finally, somehow the Republican legislature and the governor did support the Affordable Care Act and sign on to that. Should things go farther? In what way?
Yeah, and they also expanded Medicaid, which I think was big as well. I remember working on a healthcare policy issue brief back at University of Michigan Health System. Hmm. One of the biggest debates was, are people satisfied with Medicaid? And do doctors want to accept more Medicaid patients? And we conducted the survey, and the data showed that people are most satisfied actually with Medicaid, and doctors were ready and willing to accept more Medicaid patients, which we think gave it a push. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to healthcare, I think it's affordability and accessibility. Mm-hmm. I have worked on designing some of the insurance plans for HAP and trying to assess the accessibility and affordability, and we continually have these out-of-pocket increasing. The deductibles, the copays.
Deductibles, yeah.
Yeah, and 4 out of 10 working class families cannot afford those out-of-pocket payments, those deductibles and those copays. And so what do we do about that? Yes, the Affordable Care Act was great. It was a step in the right direction. We tried tackling the uninsured. but we now have a problem of the underinsured. And so it's what can we do to make sure that at least primary care services, in addition to the already given preventative services, are offered. Because, go ahead.
I think, well, I was just thinking, I took a deep breath and you saw me opening my mouth here, very observant. Affordable Care Act doesn't include everybody. I mean, some people can choose not to be part of it because they think they can't afford it, but then they have to pay a tax. And certainly, we've talked about on this show, and again, folks, I always say it once per hour, all the opinions expressed on this show from the guests, from myself, from John, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, administrators, and so on. But we thank them for the chance to speak our mind and indicate when we do have opinions. And my opinion is universal health care is the only way to go. All the civilized countries of the world, nations of the world have that and in one way or another. And why don't we just take the best parts of those systems? And I know it's a federal issue. It's a national issue. You can't do it in the state. But although some states have gotten close, Vermont was close to establishing health care for all and just couldn't manage that. I think they found they didn't have enough money to start it up or something. But a couple states are trying to do that, but they're much more liberal states than Michigan is right now in terms of its representatives.
Yeah, I believe it may be Colorado, maybe mistaken, but they actually have it on the ballot to vote on whether they're going to do universal health care. So it'd be very interesting to see if that does get pushed through. Kind of look at that state as a pilot for universal health care and see how it's actually implemented and how it works.
I have the word environment down there as a major policy area. I don't think anybody's against clean air, clean water, clean food. But certainly Pure Michigan is quite tainted as a slogan after the whole Flint debacle. Mm-hmm. And even after the Enright oil spill in Kalamazoo a couple years ago. These are things that, they shouldn't happen. And is there any approach that would help us, do you think, in the state to get back on track to Pure Michigan?
Yeah, so for a few years now, I'm the youngest serving board member for one of the state's leading environmental groups, the League of Conservation Voters. Yeah. And I think, to your point, it's just been bad decisions. There's been no accountability, no transparency. And I think what we need to do is, we need to first understand that environmental issues, conservation, is not a partisan issue. It really is. It truly is a nonpartisan issue. Access to clean air and clean water, first and foremost, is not equal. The citizens of Dearborn would tell you that access to clean air is not equal, because if you go down to the south end of Dearborn, we have higher rates of air pollution, higher rates of asthma than any other part. If you go to Flint, they'll tell you that access to clean water is not the same as individuals in Ann Arbor and so on. And I think what we need to do is communicate with one another. We need to be able to build coalitions with organizations such as the League of Conservation Voters, with other environmental organizations, as well as educate legislators and educate the community on the impact that the environment has.
It would seem like it would save money down the road so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, workers wouldn't have to take sick days because they wouldn't get sick as much if they had clean air, clean water. And a lot of people, in fact, in talking about clean air, who live in this area, if they don't get out of this area, they don't realize how much cleaner the air could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, just going... Even sometimes they get up to Traverse City area, and that's expanding, becoming quite a metropolis itself. But the air is really clean. I mean, you take a breath and you love every second of that breath. And we've got quite a ways to go. But it's nothing but good. Just sort of like an alternative energy. We only have a few minutes left, but it seems to me, and you can comment briefly if you want to, is that wind and solar, it keeps us less dependent on foreign oil. We don't need coal, which is still relatively dirty. Even natural gas gets a lot of carbon dioxide burned into the air finally. So who could be against that? Yeah. Anything that would help move us more quickly in those directions.
Yeah, and I'll just leave it at simple statement, and the data has shown a good environmental practice is good for our environment, it's good for our health, and it's good for our economy. And it's not arguable. You can argue against that.
I don't know. That's a heck of a bumper sticker. Kind of long, but it's absolutely true. Yeah, I think, my humble opinion. I'm not supporting one candidate over the other here on the show. But I'm just saying I can agree with certain issues, certainly. Well, I've got to toss this in also quickly. Democrats right now are in a minority in the House and the Senate. You're running for the 15th District rep position in the House since George Durrani is term limited. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do if you're a minority and Republicans won't let you introduce any bills, even get a chance to talk about them in committee?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so I've been... I've been grateful because my experience with the League of Conservation Voters, nonpartisan organization, has allowed me to build relationships on both sides of the aisle that currently exist. And I think importantly, we need to understand that even if I am in the minority, the Democrats are in the minority, you're still able to communicate. You can still sit down all the stakeholders, be it Republicans, Democrats, Independents, organizations that are involved in whatever issue of concern at the point, and really develop a solution together. When you have collective buy-in, I think everybody then wants to see that solution go through. And I think that's the right way to go about it. For me to say, if I'm in the minority, I won't be able to voice my concerns or provide results, you know, what's the point of running for office then if I think I can't do anything about it? So I'm looking at it more of a glass half full as opposed to half empty.
Yeah, so you'd be very busy in the hallways of the legislature, if not in the committees, if they won't let you talk. But no, I mean, George Durrani, he was part of many bills. Mm-hmm. He did what he could and helped support bills that did get up for a vote, even if they didn't finally get voted on. And mm-hmm. So he was a force and a spokesperson for the people of Dearborn, since our district is pretty much contiguously Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a few little areas, or maybe a couple blocks one way or the other. So you're speaking with Dearborn. Okay, we've got to sum up now. We're going to let you mention, it, if you want to, endorsements of your campaign in the time remaining. Got about, I'll give you 2 minutes for that, including information about maybe your campaign website. If you're going to be anywhere in the next couple of days other than knocking on doors, I think the debates are done, but he was part of the League of Women Voters Forum, which you can catch on the cityofdearborn.org website. And then you get a chance to sum up.
Yeah, of course. I'll first say that on Sunday there's actually a forum at Salina Intermediate being held by the Concerned Citizens of the South End of Dearborn, I believe. So that's at 6 p.m. It'll be for the 15th District as well as the judges' race.
Wow.
If you'd like any more information about the campaign, please reach out to www.votehamoud.com. That's H-A-M-M-O-U-D. And we will certainly be in the streets knocking doors between now up until Election Day.
Okay.
And to sum up, I mean, I'd just like to say that I believe the city of Dearborn deserves a candidate who is qualified, experienced, trusted, and focused on the issues. You know, we've mentioned healthcare, and I'm the only public health professional in this race who has been endorsed recently by the Michigan Nurses Association, a statewide union group, for my experience in healthcare policy. You know, we've mentioned the environment, and I'm actually the only candidate with environmental policy experience serving as a board member for the state's leading environmental group who's actually fought to defend our land, air, and water. You know, other endorsements include, you know, for my economic policy, I've been endorsed by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, which I've been grateful for. Sitting Wayne County Executive Warren Evans has come out and endorsed us. State Senator David Kinesic, the ranking member of the Veterans Committee, has come out and endorsed us. You know, I'm proud of the National Association of Social Workers endorsement. And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, of all the candidates, I have real state policy experience. I've been out there fighting to make a difference, working to make a change, and it's tangible. We've worked with building coalitions across the state regarding healthcare issues, environmental issues, and that experience combined with just being a product of Dearborn, I think people appreciate that I'm from this community for this community. I've lived through this community struggles, and I've celebrated its successes, and I think that's what it comes down to.
Well, Abdullah Hamoud, thank you so much for being on the new WHFR Journal for the last half hour. Gave you an extra minute because I talked a little bit at the beginning and throughout there. And we're going to move on to our next candidate interview in just a moment. Good luck with you in getting your message out and your qualifications. Good luck on the campaign. And maybe we'll see you at homecoming after we figure out what the results are.
Hopefully. Thank you again.
Bye-bye.
Summer right here. And things are so boring. You can't find the energy to move. But that's not you. You want to be where your friends and neighbors are having fun, sharing memories and making new ones. You want to be where turtles are racing, and the sweet corn and elephant ears are as delicious as you remember them, and the fireworks as spectacular as ever. The 37th annual Dearborn Homecoming, the weekend of August 5th through the 7th, has that and so much more. Three days of music includes Laith Alsaadi, hot off his successful run on The Voice as the headliner on Saturday, August 6th. You can find Dearborn Homecoming at Ford Field Park, 22051 Cherry Hill in Dearborn. So there's 3 days of live music, great food, free and affordable family activities, a carnival, and spectacular fireworks displays on Saturday and Sunday nights. The festival runs from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day. WHFR's Blue Tents will be just west of the carnival rides and south of the bridge to Ford Field, where we'll be having our big used CD and vinyl sale, open 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. each day. Come and join the festivities at Dearborn Homecoming August 5th through 7th at Ford Field Park, just north of Michigan Avenue, and beat those dog days of summer.
August 5th, 6th, and 7th, Dearborn Homecoming. WHFR will be there present broadcasting, and we shall also have our annual homecoming CD sale. All CDs and vinyl is only a dollar, and all money and proceeds go to benefit WHFR, your hometown nonprofit radio station. You can come on in if you brought a bag during our donation drive, and $89.30, you can fill that bag. I bet you can get $90 worth of CDs in that bag of your choice at the Dearborn Homecoming, August 5th, 6th, and 7th, in the Blue Tent, where WHFR will be broadcasting live, as well as having all kinds of CDs and vinyl for sale. Come on down to the Dearborn Homecoming, reminisce with your old friends, meet new ones, and have a great time.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, July the 29th, 2016, and we have our second political candidate in the studio ready to answer questions about their candidacy for WHFR and for all of you, our loyal listeners. Next week, I'll just mention that WHFR will be doing our show, WHFR Journal, live at Dearborn Homecoming from 1 to 2 o'clock, so come on down to Ford Field. Our WHFR booth will be right across from the carnival. Off the sidewalk, if you go north on Monroe Street towards Ford Field there in Dearborn, then you'll find us, and we'll be John and I will be out there talking to all kinds of people for the hour next week. But right now, Susan DeBaggia, welcome very much to WHFR.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having me. And
John Conroy is right opposite you, and he's going to ask the first question.
Sure.
Okay. Welcome, Susan. It's I'm really glad you're here.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
Yes. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, about your educational background. Why don't you give us a good sketch of where you've been as far as education goes?
Sure.
In local early education as well.
Absolutely. So I was born and raised here in Dearborn. I grew up in the south end of town. And so I attended Salina Elementary School. And then I was one of the first group of students that was then bused from the south end to Stout Middle School. Wow. So I attended Stout Middle School, and from there I went on to Edsel Ford High School. I graduated in 1995, and from there I started my undergrad at the University of Michigan Dearborn. I graduated there. I think what I did was I got my bachelor's in biology degree. I actually thought I was going to go into somewhere in the medical field, and it was still an interest as I was going through school. Sciences have always intrigued me.
Okay.
I graduated with a bachelor's in science and biology. And then I decided to start my master's degree, also in biology.
Okay.
So I attended Wayne State University for 1 year. And while I was there, I applied to law school.
Ah.
Yes.
A big switch.
Yes. I applied to law school. I had I'd also taken my DATs. I was considering dental school. And you know, I was just keeping my options open. I was a pretty good student, and but at the same time, I was always very vocal and passionate about things that I felt passionate about. And growing up, people would always tell me, you should be a lawyer. For some reason, I just didn't think that was going to be my career path. Eventually, it became quite clear that that's the route that I would be taking. And so I applied to law school. I did apply at the time where some law schools stopped accepting applications because I made a decision late in the game, and I applied, and University of Detroit Mercy did accept my application. I started there in 2001, and at the time I started, it was August 2001, I graduated in 2004, magna cum laude, and in fact, I graduated first in my law school class.
Wow.
Yeah, raising a young family, I had my oldest daughter, Claudia, was a toddler at the time when I started law school. And Joelle, my second daughter, whose birthday we celebrated yesterday, she turned 13.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. She turned, I had her my second year of law school. So you can imagine, I was raising a young family, but really dedicated to my studies and barely had time for a social life. But I was very content at law school. I participated in a lot of extracurricular activities. I was part of moot court. I was the symposium editor of Law Review over there. I also was involved in student government and individual groups there holding, panel discussions and such. So I was involved.
It sounds like with your science background and then law school, you have inexact sciences and an exact science activity. So you're uniquely prepared to run for a judge type position. You can see both sides of the coin, in other words.
Absolutely.
But of course, we didn't say this at the beginning, but you're currently serving as the president of the Dearborn City Council.
Yes, I am. I was. So back in, let me go back.
And of course,
a little bit.
Yes, you have a career as a lawyer too. Of course, in between there. So go ahead.
Well, and then let me give you guys a chronological idea of what happened. So after I graduated from law school, I was able to work at some of these bigger law firms as being first in my law school class. But I chose instead to work at a local law firm here in Dearborn. I knew I wanted to be a committed mom, but at the same time, I wanted to be a working mom. I wanted a career, and I wanted to reinvest here in Dearborn. So I started working at a local law firm. And in 2006, the individual I was working with, Sam Salami, who happens to be our chief judge, was running for a judge. He didn't make it then. And in 2012, he ran again, and I helped work on his campaign. And that really sparked my interest some more. I had worked on other campaigns as well. 2013 is when I decided I'm going to run for city council. Worked really hard. I was virtually an unknown name in the world of politics, but I had already had my name out there as an attorney, as someone that was involved in the community, and just living here most of my life. So I ran, and in November 2013, I was the top vote getter, and that earned me the spot of council president.
And you probably didn't expect that top spot, because that's a lot of work. You can't just go and sit in a chair and listen, because you're like master of ceremonies. I mean, you help prepare the agenda. The mayor sets the agenda, perhaps, or gives you agenda items, but then you sort of massage it together and you introduce it, you explain it. I mean, this is the job of the president, it's a lot of work. And I should mention to people, they have to keep in mind that it's a part-time job.
Job.
In terms of pay and benefits, it's a part-time job. But it's as president, whoa, that's a lot more than maybe what you were envisioning it might be.
And whoa is the right word to use. I'll tell you that evening. Well, when the results came in, it was, it was pretty ecstatic, very happy. I cared about was coming in at number 7. I just wanted to see it on council. And so I was very happy. And then as the noise died down that evening and people went home and I went home, I remember, putting my hands on my head thinking, whoa, what does this mean? I definitely want to go in there prepared. I think I'm the second person in the history of the council to run for the first time and earn that position. I think the only other person was also a fellow female. I believe it's Marge Powell, if my memory serves me correctly. So I did prepare immensely for it. So the day after Election Day is day that I started preparing until my very first meeting. So I met with a lot of the department directors and the mayor and administration and just talking to individual council members so I would have a good understanding of what exactly my role would be and what the role of the council would be overall. So I came in prepared first meeting, and I think people were pretty surprised with that. I think some people were waiting to see if I would fail, for lack of a better word, or how I would handle it. And I think the best what I was most proud of is the feedback I got back, that they felt that I had been doing this for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen you on television and a couple times in person at the council meetings, mm-hmm. and you're handling them, in my opinion, again, just my opinion, very, very well. Sometimes you have some difficult discussions you have to orchestrate with other council members when there's a difference of opinion. Mr. Tefelsky, for example, who used to be president, probably still wants to be president. And of course, he would be president again if you get this job that you're campaigning for, the 19th district judge. So the question comes up, why did you want to make the change? You got into the position of city council that you wanted, and you've done very well, and you've got had tremendous support from the community to get there, and mm-hmm. also I think in your years as president. What's in your mind, other than, I hate to say this, but pragmatically, it's a full-time job with a decent pay and decent benefits. Mm-hmm. And as a lawyer, you have to wait for the clients to knock on your door in many cases, but they come to you as judge. You know, they're already assigned.
Very true.
So there's a lot of pragmatic things. Of course, it's a better job. It's a real job. It's a full-time job. But again, you've done very well. So what, with only this being your first term in the council, what made the difference? What made you decide to run now?
Yeah, that's a valid question. So with council, I know you've mentioned it's a part-time job, but I've treated it very much like a full-time job. Anyone that's worked with me or has seen me through the last 3 years will tell you I have been extremely dedicated to that position. And in fact, you know, it's been a blessing that I have my own practice, because it allows me to do a lot of council-related stuff while working from my office. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's really allowed me, I think, to do well with the position. And so what happened is, definitely the career path I'd like to take is that to be a judge. And this year we have one of our judges who is retiring, and that's Judge Bill Hultgren. We haven't had, and that creates a vacancy, an open seat in the courthouse, and we have not had that happen, I would say, from what I've been told, over 25 years. Mm. So it's pretty rare in Dearborn. It's usually a contested race with an incumbent running, and the norm is that when there's an incumbent, it's pretty tough to be an incumbent. So with an open seat, I felt, you know what, with 12 years of legal experience, and you know, I have a general practice law firm, so I have a multifaceted legal career that we could talk about in a minute here. But with that type of background and representing Dearborn families over the past decade or so, and my service on council, learning more about the issues and the concerns that face our city and our residents, and you know, being part of the process of creating laws and modifying laws and knowing what the intent was, I felt, you know what, this would be a great opportunity for me to combine my public service and my profession. I definitely knew that if I didn't take this opportunity, I probably would look back at it with regret. And I remember someone once telling me that in politics, you take things as they come. If you pass it up now, you don't know if it'll exist again, you know, present itself later. So I decided that I would run. And one thing that I had to make sure of before I made that decision was, would I have to give up my seat on council while running? And if that were going to be the case, then the decision would have been no, not to run.
I see.
Because I had worked really hard for this seat, and so I didn't want to just give it up and risk it. And I really do enjoy every moment of being on council, even the contentious settings, even, you know, issues that are controversial. I thoroughly enjoy it. The people I work with, the men, you know, the six men that I work with on council have been nothing short of gentlemen and respectful towards me. And so it's a little bit of a bittersweet decision for me.
Okay. One of the topics we have here for all the candidates is to explain briefly your concept of the 19th district judgeship. I mean, what is your range of duties and the kinds of issues that you will be encountering, and therefore, I mean, if you want to do this job, excited about working out. I understand that there's traffic tickets and
yes.
Drug-related cases,
yes.
At least. Not marriage issues or divorce issues.
No.
No.
But with divorce issues, sometimes you have like domestic violence
oh, yes.
That will come before the judge. So like criminal issues that will presents itself before the court that might be tied to a divorce proceeding that's ongoing at circuit court. But yes, the 19th District Court handles cases, civil cases, with a, you know, capped at $25,000 of damages that are being requested, and criminal misdemeanors, but preliminary exams for felonies, and that's, you know, the judge's responsibility to hold a preliminary exam if it's not waived, to determine whether or not there's probable cause that a crime was committed, and probable cause that the defendant before the judge committed that crime, and then it would be bound over to the circuit court. Traffic misdemeanors or traffic violations or citations also would be handled, as well as landlord-tenant issues.
Those are more like civil cases,
yes.
not criminal. There's a difference,
yes,
between civil and criminal cases. So.
Yes. So, yeah, there's several dockets and arraignments, obviously, for criminal cases. Those are things that will be handled by any district court judge.
And your own legal experience, you've been in the district courts yourself as an attorney.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I have
very familiar with their operation and the people involved already.
Absolutely. And what I will tell you is that working in a small law firm, you learn to do everything yourself. You know, I didn't have an associate that I would assign things to. I handled things myself. So if I had to be in court, I was in court. And I have extensive courtroom experience. There are times I'm in court on a daily basis. Sometimes I have multiple hearings, and then obviously there's the office work, meaning preparing briefs, motions, research, drafting pleadings, meeting with clients, and conducting discovery. You know, all the fun stuff.
Well, we hope it's fun if you get the position, because it's no fun to have a job where it's not fun. But this would
Absolutely.
Be a different and very important level of challenge. First of all, I guess because I'm the 19th District Court in Michigan, from what I hear, has one of the heaviest court caseloads, especially since there's only three judges. I mean, if you divide it up by three, and I think it's usually sort of equally divided up, oh my gosh, it's, I don't forget what it is, 70, 80,000 a year. Or it's something like 1,000 cases a week or so. I don't know.
They have a heavy caseload over there. And
some of the cases may be 5 minutes each. I mean, it doesn't take too long to handle them, perhaps, but others could take a couple of days, right?
Oh, yeah. And there are some cases that remain open for quite a few months. I think it's really important for any judge to make sure that they're efficient. And, you know, my life as an attorney, my life as the council president, I've been very efficient. I think when you have multiple things on your plate and you're handling them, you really need to be obviously organized and structured, but efficient in what you're doing. I think I work best under pressure when I know there are a lot of balls that I need to be juggling. And I'm pretty thorough in everything that I do. One thing that I did want to mention is, you know, I've been before judges, unfortunately, where, you know, the attorney would spend the time to draft a brief, you know, research the law, create, you know, provide an argument based on law and research and precedent. And sometimes you'll appear before a judge and they may or may not have read what you've prepared, or they may have skimmed through it. And I always thought that, you know, that's not fair. Especially for the client that's paying for that attorney to spend the time to do that. You know, being the symposium editor of Law Review and really, personally writing my briefs and research and writing. I mean, I've had a paralegal, part-time paralegal on off throughout the years, but I do a lot of it. Those are things that I know that I would
like to see changed in the system?
Well, it's already part of the system, but you need to make sure our judges are following through. And there are a lot of great judges out there that do that. Once in a while, you know, you know, sometimes attorneys will feel a little disappointed, yeah. But that's something I would take seriously.
Okay. How do you do you feel you could be creative? Apparently, the judges in district courts have great range of options for sentencing. It's not just jail or fines. There could be various kinds of probations and maybe required public service of some sort. How do you feel about those approaches? Do you think you could be very creative when it comes to finding the appropriate way to? Because punishment per se doesn't necessarily help. They say it's a disencouragement, somewhat a disincentive. before people commit a crime, but that doesn't work very well that way. And sometimes punishment, you just, after it's over, people have the same lifestyle again and maybe commit the same or similar crime. So how do you feel about having all those options then, or having that range of possibilities?
I think it's very important to have that. Any judge that takes their job seriously or really wants to be effective what they're doing needs to understand that not every case fits in within, a specific box. You can't peg each case into a hole. You have to evaluate the facts before you, the situation, and really determine or evaluate what would be the best sentencing to get the best result, not only for the residents at large or the community at large, but also the individual before you, the defendant. I've handled many cases where, and with a range of different people, I've represented youth, I've represented, your average middle class, working adult. I've handled cases for seniors and people that, maybe wealthy and those that are not as wealthy. So I've seen the variety and diversity, and it's always best to evaluate the specific facts and situations before you. I do think that it's important that we allow for certain issues, certain types of crimes to either be, the sentencing would be appropriate where deterrence was most effective, and that would be like a crime, let's say, on the person, let's say a sexual assault, or a crime on property if something was stolen, then you need to send a strong message to deter someone from doing that. But if it's a drug-related crime or a crime on themselves where, they've committed a crime, I think it's important to also consider rehabilitation type services, whether it's community service, whether it's mental health services. Those are all things that need to be explored by any judge.
The 19th District Court used to have a court that was specially set up to sort of supervise defendants who were found guilty of drug offenses, called the drug court. One of the other candidates suggested they even think there should be like a veterans court for veterans issues that would, it's not just a matter of working out the sentence, but giving additional help and support through maybe counseling and social services. Mm-hmm. That obviously costs extra money. Would you be in favor of setting up something like that? Drug offenses, apparently, these small crimes, the drug offense, had apparently been increasing over the years, so we have more and more of that. It costs more, so from a city council point of view, it goes into our, probably the last question we have time for, and we got to go into your endorsements and information about your campaign and so on, but what about the funding? The city council, in my humble opinion, over the last, say, 10 years, never wanted to give very much money to the 19th District Court. They've said they think the fines should be higher so that they don't have to put as much money in, even suggesting some people should be let go. And one of the judges did try that, and then that had to be reversed. In a very, I think it's finalized, and which judge we're talking about that finally got the onus of the blame on that. But how do you see the relationship with City Council and the funding, and the creation of like these other options, like a drug court again?
What I will tell you, Jay, is since I've been serving on City Council, I have had the discussion with the chief judge about possibly visiting the idea of bringing in back a drug court or even creating veterans court, and that's something that he is open to. Obviously, funding would have to be an issue. I mean, there's pros and cons to every issue that could be presented.
Well, that's
those
true.
Things have to be evaluated and determine what would this be best for Dearborn overall. And I definitely think that it would benefit us to have a drug court. And veterans need counseling, need rehabilitative services, and so those are things that we should be exploring. I would say, with respect to the job that the district court is doing now, I know that since I've been serving on council, things have gotten much better financially, and the court is run more efficiently. And I think that's really that's a great thing. And to be able to go in there with that already set up is a blessing for me.
So you don't have certain members of the city council either mumbling or speaking out loud about the fines should be higher.
No, not at this point. Since I've been on council, I've not heard that.
I guess everything is copacetic then. That's fine. Okay, we only have 3 minutes. I want to thank Susan DeBaggio for coming in today to talk on the Journal, giving her 30 minutes to talk about her candidacy for 19th District Judge this coming Tuesday in the primary election. You can only vote once, and there's three choices. And yes. Susan DeBaggio is one of those three. But the top two go on till November.
Correct.
To duke it out. So you got to do it all over again.
Absolutely.
If you're one of the top
two. With a smile.
So what are the odds? Two out of three that you're going to get? Well, now, who knows? But I'm just saying, folks, it matters. You only get one vote here, and there's three candidates. And then because it's nonpartisan, the top two will be competing between each other again in November for the actual job. So Susan DeBaggio, you might want to mention endorsements. That seems important to a lot of people. Certainly we want you to talk about your website, how other people might see you. We just heard from the previous interview that there is a debate, and I think you've been invited to it.
Yes.
Is it Sunday?
Yes.
In Salina?
Yes,
area?
At Salina Elementary.
Okay, and that's Sunday at 7 p.m. Salina Elementary.
Yes.
Okay.
And what I would like to say is I've been endorsed by the Dearborn Firefighters Association. I'm the only candidate endorsed by them. I've been endorsed by the Dearborn Police Lieutenants and Sergeants, as well as the Wayne County Deputy Association and the Wayne County Sheriff Deputy Association, Wayne County Sheriff's Lieutenants and Sergeants. I've gotten other law enforcement endorsements, as well as several union endorsements, including the Michigan Building Trades. And I've been endorsed by former Councilwoman Nancy Hubbard, by our State Rep Morris Hood, and our Wayne County Executive Warren Evans. But the most important endorsement for me is the endorsement of the voter. I would like them really to consider me going in on August 2nd. And when they go into that booth, you know, one thing I would like to say is make sure you remember that this is a community court. I don't think it's enough to elect someone that has lived in the city for a long time, which I have, or has been an attorney for a long time, which I have as well, but really has truly been invested in the city. And that is something that I can say with full confidence. I'm very familiar with the landscape of Dearborn. I've been part of the fabric of what Dearborn is. I volunteer, through Dearborn Rotary and the Good Fellows. I'm the co-chair of the Dearborn Education Foundation. I've been knocking door to door. I take no one's vote for granted. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see that they vote me in. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Susan DeBaggio, running for 19th District Court Judge. That's all we have time for today on the new WHFR Journal. Come by our booth, WHFR booth at our tent at Dearborn Homecoming. Next week, we'll be doing the show live from 1 to 2, an election wrap-up and review of the winners, and maybe try to figure out why certain things happened that way. But finally, good luck to you, Susan DeBaggio, and continuing to get your campaign information and your candidacy out there to all the voters. And we certainly hope everybody goes and votes, too, right?
Thank you, yes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. John, thank you for being with me, too. And now it's time for Highway 61. And John will be there next week, too. Oh, boy, fun in the sun, John.
I will be there.
Okay, yes. That's a promise. That's a definite promise. All right. Highway 61, the best in the blues on WHFR Dearborn. Coming right up.
One.